Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus in for Joe Donahue. Gloria Steinem co-founded Ms. Magazine in 1972. She was one of its editors for 15 years and continues to serve as a consulting editor. She played an integral part in the magazine's move to be published by the Feminist Majority Foundation. In 1968, she helped found New York Magazine, where she was a political columnist and wrote feature articles. Steinem's honors include, but are not limited to, an Emmy Citation for Excellence in Television Writing, the Women's Sports Journalism Award, the Lifetime Achievement in Journalism Award from the Society of Professional Journalists, the Society of Writers Award from the UN, and most recently, the University of Missouri School of Journalism Award for Distinguished Service in Journalism. Gloria Steinem will mark the 40th anniversary of Ms. Magazine with a talk in the Vassar Chapel at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York, coming up this Wednesday, September 19th, and she joins us now. Gloria Steinem, what an honor to welcome you to the roundtable.
Thank you. It's an honor for me.
40 years of Ms. What were your goals when it first started?
I would say we just wanted to create and work for a magazine we actually read. I mean, most of us had worked for other women's magazines as editors and writers, and there were certainly individual articles in those magazines that captured us and we thought were worthwhile, and we bought them when we needed to buy clothes to go back to school or something, but there was no magazine that really spoke for us in its entirety. Not due to the fault of other magazine editors, but really because advertising dictates women's magazines. You have to write about the products you advertise, clothes, fashion, beauty, and so on, in order to get those ads. So, you know, we just wanted to have a magazine that was, you know, it's like the best general interest, but was focused on news and fiction and art and so on that wasn't published, because at that point, and actually still, it's harder to get news about the female half of the population published.
Why do you think that is? I mean, of course, 1972 seems like a different era, but in many ways we're having the same conversations today.
Yes, I think we're having a backlash against the success of the women's movement and the civil rights movement, all the social justice movements, in changing the consciousness of the majority of the country. So now people who were born into, through no fault of theirs, a more hierarchical view of life are in backlash. They're worried that this is going to be a no longer majority white country in about 20 minutes. They're very upset by women's ability to control our own lives, especially to control reproduction, and they're in backlash against it. So what we are seeing now is a response to the success that began in the 70s.
When you see a national political conversation hinging on women's health issues the way it has for much of the last few months, do you think that the reason that is such a loud conversation is that it scores political points, or that these freedoms are actually at stake still?
Well, both things could be true. I mean, in scoring political points, the other side could take our freedoms away. It's a question of motivation, and I think probably we need to ask each person. You know, some people are doing this because they sincerely believe it, some others because they want the Tea Party vote. You know, I suspect it's mixed, but I think the overall problem is the deep problem is the desire to control reproduction and therefore to control women's bodies. It's interesting that the same forces, for instance, that are against family planning, contraception, abortion, and so on, are also the ones that are against love between two men, between two women, marriage equality, and immigration. You know, because part of it is a racial fear, because the country is becoming a not majority white country, and white women tend to have fewer children for cultural reasons. And part of it is even deeper than that, which is losing control of the means of reproduction, which means how many workers there are, how many soldiers there are, who owns them in systems of paternity and so on. So, you know, I think it's very fundamental. It's the one issue, for instance, on which the right wing will reliably vote against its own financial self-interest. I mean, they know that if we don't allow reproductive freedom, that is, allow each woman to decide whether and when to have children, that every unwanted birth or birth that, you know, women just can't afford to take care of costs the country millions and millions of dollars, but they don't care because there's a form of control that's even more important than economics.
So, watching this election, do you feel that the left, the Democrats, are adequately running on this issue to their strength?
No, but they're doing better than they have before, because I think they can see that this is the biggest gender gap in history. It's the biggest race gap in history. They understand who their constituency is, but the temptation is to take your constituency for granted and then reach out to the independents, to the center, and that sometimes means abandoning your constituency. I hope that there's very little of that strategy in this case, because there are almost no independents. And if we just energize the base, as politicians say, Obama would be a victor by a huge margin.
You know, part of that base is young voters. You'll be speaking at Vassar, and you've been speaking to college campuses for quite a while. Do you enjoy interacting with young people, and have you noticed any change on campuses in the years that you've been a featured guest there?
I enjoy it very much, and I always learn at least as much as I have to contribute. I think young people have higher standards, greater expectations. They remind all of us to have higher standards. And I think what we can remind them of, and one of the things that's changed over time since I've been on campus, is this really dangerous situation now with young people graduating in debt. Huge amounts of debt. I mean, more collective debt than the entire credit card debt of the country. And this is very, very dangerous and unfair. It indentures people. You know, it makes you be obedient and seek the highest paying job, even if it isn't what you love or are talented to do, in order to pay back the debt, which only death can cancel, not even bankruptcy. Now, that's bad for everybody, but it's even worse for women, who will earn, on the average, $2 million less over their lifetime of work, so it's harder for them to pay back. It's harder for people of color to pay back. So, you know, that's just one of the most current changes that's important to talk about. We need a piece of legislation that at least makes this subject to bankruptcy.
Yeah, how would you fix that? I mean, schools are charging, you know, $200,000 for a bachelor's degree. It's hard to see where you can eventually pay that off in your lifetime. But on the other hand, students are, you know, they're being told that the master's degree is the new bachelor's.
And that the BA is a high school degree. I mean,
it's
downgraded everything. Well, I think there, as always, there's more than one solution. But one of the major causes of the rising tuition would not be true for Vassar, but for universities that depend on income from state legislatures. That has been greatly cut. So we need to look at ours. Most people don't know who their state legislators even are, you know, so we have to focus on state legislatures instead of only focusing on Congress and change the priorities there. Also, I think we need to examine the value of degrees. You know, we've been told that everybody has to have a degree, but there are great, dignified, rewarding professions that may pay more. Being a mechanic, being a carpenter, being a computer expert, you know, all of these. I think we've been made to worship a piece of paper that is not necessarily more than a piece of paper.
Just in the couple of seconds we have left, I know you've been a big supporter of the Chicago teachers. We just heard in the newscast the strike is ongoing today. What's your take on that level of education and what's going on in Chicago?
You know, Chicago is a very important turning point, perhaps, because finally the anti-teacher, anti-union sentiment that has been sweeping the country, partly because, of course, there are problems with teachers and unions, but I think largely because there is an effort to privatize schools, often through the method of charter schools, and make them centers of corporate profit. So there has been a big effort to discredit and demonize teachers. And this is really a big pushback, and I'm very proud of the union in Chicago for having the courage to do this in the face of New York Times editorials that are almost word for word Rahm Emanuel's talking points, and all the efforts, you know, to discredit them. They are standing up for the students, and this teachers union is very courageous, in part, I think, because they're really a community group that was concerned about the union and took over the union. You know, so they're really speaking for the community. You can see that in the Chicago area, the public opinion polls are 2-1 in favor of the union over Mayor Emanuel. So we'll see. You know, it's not easy, and it's a terrible situation in the Chicago schools where, you know, there's actually physical dangers inside the schools of asbestos and so on, and not sufficient heat or cooling, and textbooks don't come for weeks after school starts. It's enormous problems, and the answer is not to demonize teachers for the problems. Then also, we as citizens have to look at a very fundamental problem, which is the money available to schools is based on property taxes. And that means that the people who need it the most, say kids who are entering not speaking English, speaking a wide variety of languages and need a boost in the beginning, get the least per capita spending instead of the other way around.
Gloria Steinem, this will be, I'm sure, one of the topics. You'll be delivering a public lecture in the Vassar Chapel. That's at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, New York, Wednesday, September 19th at 7 p.m. To learn more, you can visit vassar.edu. Gloria Steinem, I just want to thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.